makes a yacht great and why? Who makes a great yacht and how? These are the questions that keep me up at night. My name is Dave Malik, and I invite you to join me and my guests here on the Fog Warning Podcast, where we aim to provide dependable answers to these eternal questions of yachting. With $50 million in yacht sales under my belt, and with the input of builders, designers, brokers, and yacht owners that I trust and value, I'm sure we can add real value to your nautical life. So, I'll sound the fog warning horn, and we will dive right in. This week, I bring you Anno Larhoven from Rotterdam. Anno is the founder of Long Island Yachts, a line of Dutch boats that have made a real splash in Europe, I think in part because of their classic American look. With the launch of their 100th boat next month, I think it's high time that Americans got more familiar with them as well. All righty. So, good morning, Anno.
Good morning to you, Dave.
Well, it's morning here. Where are you and what time of day is it?
It is almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm at home in the Netherlands, small town called Oegschreest.
Oegschreest.
Oegschreest between The Hague and Amsterdam, next to the medieval city of Leiden.
I like Leiden. I like Leiden a lot.
Nice, good.
So today we're supposed to get in New York between 1 and 2 feet of snow. I hope you're not getting that there.
Oh, then that's absolutely out of the question over here.
Good.
10 degrees centigrade, sunny. It's nice weather. Nice winterly weather.
All right. So winter or not, let's talk about boats. So you're the founder of Long Island Yachts. And for my listeners and readers who are not familiar with Long Island Yachts, I want to take this from a conversation between 2 4-year-olds. What is a Long Island yacht?
A Long Island yacht is a open or semi-open motorboat with very nice lines, seaworthy, classic design. And basically, it's a joy to the eye and a fun machine in one.
A joy to the eye and a fun machine. Wow. And it's funny, there's the old saying, of course, that a picture is worth 1,000 words. When it comes to boats and to fine arts, you know, a picture is worth 1,000,000 words. And anyone who wants to see the pictures can go to the Long Island Yacht website or the Fog Warning blog and website, and there'll be links on the show notes. So, but all we have is words today. So, how would you describe this boat? What's its look? What is its class or styling? Paint a picture for us.
Well, I think where you live is where the term down east boats originates from. And that's what we really did. We looked at the down east lobster kind of boats and mixed that with some traditional European speedboat kind of styling, and then the typical Dutch user-friendliness and construction. So when you mix those things, then you come to the Long Island boat.
And what sizes do you build them in?
So from the smallest 25 feet, 29 feet, 33 feet, and 40 feet.
I like it. I mean, those even before the pandemic here, those were the most popular boats sold in America, or probably will always be the most popular boats sold in America. And how long have you been in business with this?
Started with the idea in 2004, started building in 2005, and market introduction in the Netherlands was in 2006.
Quite a while, 14 years now.
16 years when you count 2004 in. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
In our industry, I mean, you know this. Well, I'm sure this is true in Europe as well as in America. you know, 15 years and going strong is a milestone, especially when you think about all the builders that collapsed way back in the financial crisis in 2008. About a quarter of the builders in America went away, you know.
Right.
So this is an accomplishment. I've been to your factory. I've met you in Holland many times. I've run boats there and here. So some of my questions I already know the answer to, but my listeners don't. So you have two different lines or two different model lines within Long Island Yachts, right? What are they?
Correct. Yes. So we have the version with a windscreen and a small cabin. Well, small, that's only up to the 33 feet, because the 40 feet, that has a real cabin with two staterooms, a saloon, and a bathroom with a separate shower. So that's like a motor yacht. And then we have the sportsman version, and those are completely open. And the sportsman we have in three lengths, so 25, 29, and 33. So the 40 sportsman is not available.
So you've got the sportsmen, which are sort of luxury, what we would call them here in America, luxury center console boats. Those that started as fishing boats, whether they were Makos or Grady Whites, or and now there are builders, a few in America, and fewer in Europe, who've sort of moved up and introduced luxury versions of this, really the highest end of the center consoles. And when I saw a sportsman for the first time, that just struck me as sort of a higher degree of finish and engineering. And then the other models are sort of what we would call here in America cuddy cabin or runabout models. They're really sort of day boats, of course, but you could overnight on them quite easily. Would you agree?
Yeah, correct. That's exactly the idea. So the 25, the 29, and the 33, they have one cabin, and of course, depending on the size of the boat model, is also the size of the cabin is increasing. And you can spend a very comfortable night on board on those boats.
All right. You sold me. I'd like to do that.
I did. I can recommend it to you.
So how many have you built?
We're now close to 100 units.
Ain't that great? Wow. That is great. And where are they?
Actually, they're quite spread around the world. So the majority has been sold in the Netherlands. We sold a couple of numbers to Scandinavia. There's a boat in Dubai.
There's a boat in Dubai?
Is a boat in Dubai, yeah, sure.
Which boat?
It's a 33.
Oh, wow.
And we have a couple of boats in Australia. And there are four boats in the U.S.
Four. We got to do something about that. We need more than four.
That would be great.
You know, there's this amazing video on your website and on mine, and it's available on YouTube, which I just think is so cool. So there's some Dutch mega yacht. It looked to me to be around 140 feet or so, doing an Arctic cruise. And if you have sharp eyes, you could see that the tender on that boat is a Long Island yacht.
It is. It is a 28 Sportsman equipped with a twin 180 horsepower diesel. It was the tender of Explorer Superyacht Legend. That was an old expedition vessel being converted to a yacht. And I think that Long Island has the most mileage on it. It's been around the world, Antarctica, and everywhere. Unbelievable.
So this expedition yacht, I don't know the details, but looking at the videos, it's just incredible. Clearly, this was an owner who could have put any tender he wanted on this yacht. How did he come to find you? Why a Long Island yacht for him?
It's a Dutch owner. So he's he also has another vessel of the same kind. He sold Legend, and he did a refit on that a couple of years ago, and he just wanted to have the tender that suits Legend very well. And the nice thing is Legend is elegant and rugged at the same time. And Long Island is more elegant than rugged, but the 28 Sportsman did the job very well, either in the tropics or in Antarctica.
Well, we'll talk about rugged later when I talk about the sea trial I did recently of a 25 Sportsman here in the States. I've got some opinions and observations about that, so we'll get back to rugged. Well, that's a great story. I think it's instructive. I'm always fascinated by the decisions and choices that people make, people of great means who could really buy or build anything. I'm always curious about what they choose and how. So this guy, this guy's going north to the Arctic and the Antarctic, and the boat he chooses to bob around in these iceberg-filled waters is a Long Island yacht. So I give you guys a lot of credit for that. That's just great. Let's talk a little bit about the class of boat. When I look at Long Island yachts, what I see and what I saw, and we should talk about how at some point this podcast about how we met and how this all happened. But to me, your boats fit into a really rapidly growing sector of luxury day boats. Do you see it that way?
Exactly. That's exactly the sweet spot of the market that we're in. Yes, I agree with you on that.
It really is. In the last 3 years, we've all seen in America, and I've really studied this carefully, just this tremendous growth in the luxury day boat market. There's a sector of boat owners that are, and again, these are people who could own anything, who go big, right? They want the super yachts, and they want the elegance and styles and most of all, the engineering, I think. That goes with the best of the best. I mean, this is why the owner of the super yacht market really is sort of the Northern European, whether it's, of course, the Dutch builders, Fedship and Heysen, et cetera, the Northern German builders, Lursen, et cetera. I mean, these people command the market because of quality of the boats and the engineering that goes into it. And then you have people with the same interests who want those same deliverables, right, on the small boats that they can just take out for the day. And wow, that market is booming here.
Yeah.
Notably, this week, and I apologize for the American reference, right? So this is our culture here. But just about the most, most famous football player in America, NFL quarterback Tom Brady, took delivery of a 55-foot Wire, which is his first boat. Can you talk about Wire a little? Believe me, there are four, I believe, Long Island yachts, you said, in America. Well, there's less than four Wires in America. So what's a Wire?
Well, Wire is owned by Dries Wire, and his father, Doris Wire, founded the company over 20 years ago. And he was building very traditional but very high-end sloops, like launches. And around 2005, he was selling them to the rich and famous in the Netherlands. And those people, they decided to move southwards to the south of France. And for that region, you need a different boat than an inland launch.
So for them, I'm sorry for interrupting. You said sloop. To us, a sloop is a sailboat. What's a sloop?
A sloop is like an open launch. So you see them in a harbor launch. You cruise canals.
Okay.
So it's slow speed. Really take the boat out for a couple of hours, cruise at about six knots max, and enjoy its tranquil afternoon with your friends.
Well, 6 knots max is not going to do it in Saint-Tropez and Portofino. No,
exactly. And so, but for the inland water, Dutch waterways, small canals, small rivers, lakes, like cruising Amsterdam, for that purpose, a sloop, a launch is just perfect.
You know, whenever I'm in Amsterdam or Rotterdam or Leiden, it's such a cool thing because the sweet spot, the magic hour seems to be around 5 o'clock at night. Because at 5 o'clock, at least in the summer, 5 o'clock at night, everybody goes out on their boats, on their open boats mostly, and yes, they cruise the canals.
Exactly.
And I see, you know, bottles of wine and lots of food, the kind of socializing people might do, you know, in their backyards or in their homes. They go out and they do on the canals, and they just look like they're having so much fun.
Exactly. What you say is exactly right. This extension of the backyard. So it's a floating backyard.
Ah, very good. Very good. Well, wires, so, please go on.
So Doris Weyer, he designed a very elegant boat, 37 feet, to fit the needs of those Dutch people buying property in the south of France and having a day boat over there. And he did very well on that. A lot of Dutch experienced boat owners, they bought a wire for the Mediterranean as a day boat, and they just did a tremendous good job on marketing by having these boats around in the area where people saw them. So. So they expanded the range from the 37, and that was renewed to 38. Now they introduced the 55 a couple of years ago, and now they go even bigger. And so it's tremendous success, high quality, very nice designed large day boats.
Well, there's a lesson for all of us and the rest of the market. So Weyer is spelt for Americans, and again, I think Tom Brady's boat would be the fourth Weyer in all of America. It's spelled Wager. I'm very impressed with them. I'm very impressed with Dries. 55 in particular really, really is something. And Weyer does something in the Med that is remarkable. They really have this sort of golden glove or velvet glove way of a lifestyle they can present towards their owners. Do you know anything about that? Can you talk about that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So what they do, they really make you go out boating without a worry. So what they do is they take care of your boat. When you have it in a marina, when you go out to the sea, They fill up your refrigerator, they take off the canvas, they even pre-start the engine if you like. So the only thing you have to do is hop on board, take the boat out, enjoy yourself, and when you come back, you moor it and you leave it and they take care of it. So it's really a perfect way of enjoying boating.
As I understand it, for many owners also, like they provide the captain. You tell them, I'm going to be there Tuesday at 1, and they have a Weyer employed captain there to take you out.
Exactly, and that's what most of them do.
That's what most of them do. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and they also provide a concept where you buy the boat, and they rent it out for you, including a captain, and when you take it out yourself, they arrange everything for you. So it's a really neat concept for hassle-free boating.
You know, I've studied this even before Weyer was, before I became aware of Weyer, and I'm not alone. A lot of very smart people in America have tried to sort of design this worry-free, you know, yachting concept. You know, you arrive and the refrigerator in the wine bar is stocked and there's a captain there and you go out. or there's no captain, but you go out and then you come back and you toss them the keys and they pack the boat up and clean it up, and it's all ready to go next time. It's just worry-free. And I've really been envious, very jealous of what Dries has been able to do in Europe. And we've tried it here in America. I mean, Hinckley put a lot of work into studying this, for example, on how to do this in America. But the problem is there's 1,600 miles of coastline on the east coast of America. And if boats are spread out, there's really no economy of scale where a company can do this affordably. How is he able to do it in the Med?
Yeah, you have some a couple of hotspots in the Med. Saint-Tropez, Ibiza, and that's where they offer this this service. So it's not anywhere. You have to have your boat in one of the hotspots. There are more in the south of France, but I recognize what you're saying. You can't do that from any port.
Yeah, so you put the boats where your clients are, and exactly. and you reach a sort of critical mass, right, of ownership.
Exactly.
Yes. And then it takes off.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this luxury day boat market. Well, first of all, so Tom Brady just got his 55 a few weeks ago, and you can see the video on my website shortly. Yeah. And he's the second NFL quarterback to actually buy a Dutch day boat. Here's another name that you have no reason to know, you know. But John Elway, who's a legendary quarterback with the Denver Broncos, this end of last year bought a Zeelander 44.
Right.
Yeah, and both of these quarterbacks keep them in Florida, and again, you know, these are people who could buy anything, who could afford anything, and the fact that they go Dutch, I think, is just tremendously instructive on the appeal of Dutch yachting. You know, the I don't know if this is your mantra in Holland. I don't know if it has to be your mantra in Holland. But here in America, really, on the fog warning, it's becoming more and more prominent. My mantra is, if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it works for you. Anno, if you'll just indulge me for a moment, we're going to take a brief nautical interlude. And now a word from our sponsor. And that sponsor, loyal listeners, is me, Dave Malik. We all laugh at the joke, right? If it ain't Dutch, it ain't much. And there's a lot of truth in that. But wherever they're built, whether they be new boats or brokerage, there are certainly a lot of fine yachts out there looking for new owners. But not as many as there used to be. It's true, yacht sales have been very strong during the pandemic. Here at the Fog Warning, I've sold 3 brokerage boats over the last few months, and I'm close to sold out. If you're looking to sell your yacht, I'd like to let you know that the Fog Warning is here to help. With some 10,000 readers around the world and thousands of loyal clients, I think I've got a unique and broad reach to promote your yacht and find her a new home. And now, with the podcast, that message can travel with even more power. I've found that few yacht brokers can communicate the true value of a brokerage yacht as well as their owner, with the passion and enthusiasm they bring. So if you have a story to tell about your yacht, let's talk about it at length here on the Fog Warning podcast. I think putting your story out there before thousands of qualified yacht buyers is a ticket to success. Want to hear more? Just launch a flare. And now, back to our regularly scheduled broadcast. And then more broadly in the luxury day boat market, Pardo Yachts is doing so well. They're an Italian builder.
Yeah, they're from Italy. Yes, correct. Yeah.
And I forget the name of their predecessor company or their parent company, but they built sailboats, right? Is that right?
Yeah, it's the parent company is Cantieri del Pardo, and the sailing yacht brand they have is Grand Soleil.
That's right, Grand Soleil. Right.
And they build a lot of those boats, so they're a very experienced boat builder.
Well, it's really funny because I've been doing this now 23 years. And I started with sailboats. Right. And I still, you're a sailor, right? So this is what you do for fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I own a small racing trimaran. I love to sail. But in all my travels, I have never seen a Grand Soleil in America. Yeah. Then they go into the luxury day boat market. And now there are Pardos everywhere.
They are, yes.
Everywhere.
They really did a great job on that. Absolutely.
Then you've got the Van Dutches, which, although they're called Van Dutch, built in America, a bunch of smaller builders. And then you've got, you know, look, it comes down to what is the definition of a day boat? What's your definition of a day boat?
A day boat is, a day boat can be any kind of boat because a lot of boats are being used to spend a day on. even larger yachts. But when you're talking about the luxury day boat segment, those are boats you take out really for a day or for a couple of hours. And I also think that the concept behind the day boats is that you don't have the hassle of a larger boat. So you do have the looks, the quality, and the performance of a high-end boat, but you don't have the hassle of owning a large yacht.
Yeah, hassle is key. You know, I sold, brokerage is a very healthy part of my business, and I sold a brokerage yacht for a client not long ago. So this was an 85-foot boat, and it was a beautiful boat, and he loved the boat, and his family owned the boat. And when I asked him why he wanted to find a new home for it, he said, you know, at a certain point, after some number of years, after some size of boat, you come to feel that you don't own the boat owns you.
Yeah.
And he went smaller, and he bought a day boat, right? Now, he bought a day boat under your definition. I'm not sure the builder of this particular boat would call it a day boat, but, you know, 95% of owners' uses are from the dock and out and back. And Ferretti, for example, right? So Ferretti's been around since World War II. They make these beautiful, sexy boats, Riva and Ferretti. They don't call them day boats, but there's not a lot of accommodations, and people use them for the day, right?
Exactly, yes, they do.
In fact, you know, one of the reasons I think Wire does so well in the Med is, I mean, they are, of course, a Dutch company, and they've got the Dutch DNA. But there's definitely a certain Italian flair to them.
Yeah, there is a very stylish element that those boats have. They just got a sex appeal. And how nice is that you have a boat, and you, when you see it, you like. Well, in love is a big word, but
no, it's a good word.
You're really, yeah, you have positive vibes, good vibrations, you feel emotionally well, and that's the whole thing. We have an owner in the Netherlands, and he doesn't use the boat very much. He doesn't take it out for long trips, but what he does, he takes it for a spin of half an hour, then he moors it at a restaurant, and he just has a wonderful dinner or lunch at the restaurant, and he looks at his boats, and he looks at his boats that is moored there, and yeah, he has a beautiful day.
Well, I love it, and you've described so many people and so many boats here in America. You know, the thing about Long Island Yacht, and this is become one of the ways that I sort of evaluate the aesthetic or the styling of a boat is and I sort of got this with Riva early on. If a boat looks like it's moving while it's standing still, that's a great boat.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Rivas do that. And I think the Long Island Yachts do that as well. It's just something about the flow of it all, you know? How did you come up with this look and this style and this design?
Well, you talk about Riva, and taste is very subjective, but I think Riva is one of the most prestigious brands in the yachting industry. And why is that? They just look stunning, and we see pictures of a Riva. It's this distinctive design that you really appreciate, and you say, "Hey, this is class! Really beautiful." And also, when a Riva goes out of the marina, this nice VA rumbling that you hear. So they're just beautiful looking boats. And a nice thing about Long Island, it has this beautiful tumble home stern, very elegant lines. And at the same time, they're very, very practical. So you don't have the disadvantages of owning a classic boat with all the maintenance. And when people step on board, they have to be careful that they don't damage anything. There's not very comfortable room to maneuver, and the Long Island boats they combine everything. So you have a stunning looking boat and all the practicality of an item that you use. You have a nice what's a nice English word for that? Something that you use.
You said practical earlier. You said luxury and practical. That's a hard combination to pull off. I think Long Island's do it. You know, when I talk to boat builders or entrepreneurs or clients or any successful people, there's a question I love to ask, which is, what was your big idea? How did this start? So, Anno, what was your big idea? How did this happen?
Yeah, I can tell you that. I've been a boating enthusiast for many, many years. When I was a young boy, I was already reading all the boating magazines, checking all the ads, checking all the brands, all the boats in different sizes. I was like a walking boating encyclopedia, like a boating nerd. And just one day I decided, well, why not build a boat that is just a looker, performs very well, and also is great to drive, to maneuver, to perform. And I combined all those elements, and then the Long Islands that came up. So, and it was also time to do something new. In my life, and I said, okay, my father is an entrepreneur. He founded a company, and it's not that I wanted to do the same, but it was a nice example of starting something really from scratch.
And how did you come up? What was your image of the look? You know, you were a boating nerd, right? And you've been talking about Riva, and I know you're a sailor. So when you can't sleep at night and you're staring at the ceiling and the expression, is this a Dutch expression as well? Counting sheep?
Absolutely, yeah. Counting sheep.
Well, people like you and me and most of my clients, we count boats, you know, as we go. Yeah. So you had an image of what kind of boat you did. Was your image what you wanted to build, what you thought would sell? I mean, Long Island yachts are not a typical Dutch-looking boat or even a typical European-looking boat. They're very much an American-looking boat. How did you come up with this?
East Coast of the U.S. always had an appeal on me with, the way of... the romantic way of the East Coast of the U.S., which is what we see here in Europe, very honest boats. The lobster style kind of style. So, what I did, and of course there are also yacht builders in the U.S. that have these down east style boats. So what I did, I said I really love that styling and that appeal and that heritage? And why not combine that with the use that we have in Holland for taking a boat out for a couple of hours, enjoying with friends and family, and on the inland waterways, but also having the ability to travel the distance. So if you say, okay, guys, we cross the North Sea to London, the boat must also be able to do that. And
now let me interrupt you. You know, crossing the North Sea is no small accomplishment. When I think North Sea, I think about, you know, those ships that have to supply the oil rigs. The North Sea is a tough sea.
The North Sea is a commercial highway. It's you have two channels, one going north and one going south. There, it's commercial shipping lanes. Unbelievable the activity on the North Sea. But it is short waves. Fishing grounds. A lot is happening on the North Sea.
You say short waves. In my experience on the North Sea, the waves are square. You know, they're not soft. Every time you hit a wave, you hit a wall there in the North Sea.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's happening on the North Sea, yeah.
So I'm going to race ahead here. You've got this amazing video on your website. You would organize some sort of, it's like D-Day in reverse. You would organize this sort of expedition from Holland to Inc. Tell me about this.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about Long Island owners is they really appreciate their boats and they love their boats. And there's a community here in Holland of Long Island owners. And every year they organize a trip with a number of boats. And last year they decided to cross the channel, the North Sea, to London. And the first day, and they split up over 2 weekends.
Mm-hmm.
The first weekend was from the Netherlands, in the central Netherlands, to the Belgium port of Newport.
Newport. There's a Newport in Belgium?
Yeah, and you pronounce it Newport, but it's exactly Newport. So it's exactly the same meaning. And the weekend after, we took the boats out and crossed the North Sea to the British coast. I forgot the name of the Queenborough. Queenborough is the name of a small port.
How many boats?
We were at six boats. Yeah.
And you traveled together like a fleet.
Yeah, we traveled together like a fleet. Yeah, that's part of the fun.
How was the weather? How was the crossing?
The weather was it was dry. It was quite nice temperature. In the beginning, we really had rough sea, rough waves, and it was the wind and the current in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But as soon as we crossed a buoy, the sea turned more calm, and then it was a very relaxing ride with speeds between 20 and 25 knots. So, and 25 knot speeds is just perfect for Long Island.
How big were these boats?
Smallest 28 and the largest 33.
Ah, I love it. And what'd you do when you got to the UK?
We first spent the night in Queensborough, and then the next morning it took us only 1 or 2 hours to reach London. And then we arrived at the St. Catherine's Docks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just next to the Tower Bridge.
Yeah, right there.
And it's great. It's a medieval center of London. It's unbelievable. And also the experience when you go with six Long Islands on the Thames, entering downtown London. We felt like conquerors.
I know the conqueror.
it was nice. And so we arrived there and had some nice drinks on the docks. And then in the afternoon we took the boat out for to go more upstream. And it was beautiful weather, and there were people on the Tower Bridge that were cheering at us, waving at us.
This was summertime, I imagine.
Summertime. It must have been a great sight seeing these planing boats through the London city centre.
Well, some of it's on the video. How was the trip back?
In the thinking of why you're making it easy for your clients, we have our own transport service. So the owners just left the boats in London, and we took care that they were transported back to their marinas.
I love it. So also on your website or somewhere, maybe it was on YouTube, I saw it, you had another expedition of Long Islanders, but this was an inland expedition. Is that right?
Yeah, we did several, but the nicest one was going down the River Rhine from Germany to the North Sea in Rotterdam. So that was really a great experience.
So I don't know that. I've never done any river cruising in Europe. What is that like?
I think that is really the nice, the best kind of boating that there is. So we had a freighter going from Rotterdam up the Rhine River, 600 kilometers. That is, 300 miles, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the freighter, there was a port on the River Rhine where we offloaded them. And the next morning, the clients, the owners came. We were at 11 boats by that time.
11, wow.
11, yes. And we just went with the flow. In the morning, 2-3 hours. In the afternoon, 2-3 hours. 20, 25 knots, beautiful weather. Enjoying the countryside, medieval castles on the mountains next to us. Very famous Lorelei. Those were rapids in the past, where there's a current of 6 knots. So
yeah, there's some famous poem about that. I didn't realize so the currents aren't the rocks aren't there anymore.
The rocks aren't there anymore, but okay. There's very strong currents. So. And then we had lunch over there. We took an old train going up to the castle. Had lunch, looking down on the boats.
Oh boy,
beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, so you've got this great network of owners. They really seem to just love being part of your cult, you know?
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah,
really. That listen, cults are very, very important, you know.
Yeah.
So. Let's talk a little bit, let's zoom up a bit, zoom out a bit, fly a little higher, and talk about boat building in Holland. You know, earlier I talked about the super yachts built in Holland still and sort of leading the world. And I want to talk about the boat building business more specifically. So let's talk about how and when you and I met, if you recall. It was a long time ago.
I remember, yeah. We did the first time we met, we also took a boat out, I remember.
Yes, we took out it was not a Sportsman. It was the 33, your 33 Classic.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Well, you know, from my end, let me tell a story I've never told sort of publicly. I tell it privately with clients, but I've been doing this a while and much of my career was spent selling Turkish boats and big cold molded motor yachts, and Veecham was the line, and they were and they are beautiful. In 2012, let's go back. So 2008, I'm at the Monaco Boat Show selling and showing a Veecham 94. And it was a big week in Monaco because there were these rumors. You know, yacht brokers love to gossip. You probably the same in Holland. And all the talk at the Monaco Boat Show was that Roman Abramovich, the Russian oligarch, was coming to the show because he was just finishing up the build of what at the time was going to be the largest private yacht in the world. It was 100 meters or a little more. And he was looking for a support vessel, sort of to cruise around with the big boat. So everyone was expecting Roman to be at the show, and everyone was hoping they could sell him the support vessel. And lo and behold, I got to meet him. And I brought him aboard the Veachem, which was cold-molded mahogany, and he liked it. And it was the size that he was looking for, give or take 10 feet. And he said, well, can you build it in steel? And I said, well, we haven't, but I'm sure we could. My team is quite industrious. And he nodded his head and he walked through the boat for a while. And then before he left the boat, he said, very nice, Dave, but it's not Dutch. And I was like crushed, you know, just crushed. So I did something later that day, which I almost never do at a boat show, which is I left my boat to go walk around in my gloom and doom, you know. And I went to see a Dutch super yacht, which I had never seen before, not up close, you know. And that was a Moonen.
Right, yeah.
And Moonens were, this one, are they all steel? This one was steel.
Steel, most steel with aluminum superstructure or completely aluminum.
Oh, okay. Well, this was a steel one. And I was just blown away. And then later that day, I went to go see an Italian boat, a Benetti of the same size, which was really nice, you know, but it wasn't a Moonen.
Correct. Yeah.
So I'm doing, you know, round numbers, and this was some years ago. But if the Benetti, and I think it was a 137, was 14 million euros, the Moonen was 20 million euros. So it was, you know, 50% more, but it was 100% more boat.
Correct. Yeah.
The quality, the fit and finish, the components were amazing. You know, look, I'm not knocking Benetti. They're the largest super yacht builder in the world, but they build for a price. They come up with, the marketing people help them come up with what they think the market will bear for a super yacht, and they then build to that price, and they do it really well. What I saw with Moonen is they didn't care about the price. They wanted to build the best boat they could, and then they priced it to make some money on it, of course, you know, and then out the door she went, and it just blew me away. So now fast forward, so that was in 08. I worked 4 more years, then I retired in 2012, took a couple of years off. And when I decided to come back to the boat biz, I just remembered that conversation with Abramovich, where he said, you know, very nice, but it's not Dutch. And I said, you know, I know the big Dutch builders, but I don't know the small Dutch builders. So I decided to go to Holland. And I found you, which was one of the joys of my career and of my life, and you took me around, and I probably talked to 15 builders in Holland of small boats, meaning 50 feet and under, and most of them were and are still not really appropriate for the U.S. market or the U.S. aesthetic. You know, Dutch boats are Dutch.
They are, yeah.
You know, you talked earlier about these 6-knot cruises, right? So most Dutch boats are not speedy. They're displacement boats. A lot of them are steel. They are not, they put it this way, like we were talking about Riva and Long Island Yacht, they don't look like they're moving when they're standing still.
Exactly, yeah.
When they're standing still, they look like they're standing still.
Yeah.
You know? But they were a few, and also most Dutch builders are really small. You know, they build 2 or 3 boats a year, a lot of custom work. And I was looking for a line or lines of boats that I think would succeed in America. And this is a big country, right? You need builders who can produce. But I found a few, that I thought would work. And of course, one of them was Zoolander, which had been selling in America for maybe 8 years at that point, but not with, you know, hit it out of the ballpark numbers. And I had never heard of Wire, for example, until you brought me over to them. And I thought they had real potential in America. And then I saw your boats. And at your size, meaning 40 and under, and mostly in the 30s, and at your price points, which are not seven-figure price points by any means, I said, I have seen the future. Do you know who Bruce Springsteen is?
Oh, sure.
In Holland, you know him. Good.
Yeah, he's 20 years ago, he was one of the great idols in the Netherlands.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so good to hear. So
born in the USA.
I am. He is.
Good for you. Good
we'll
for
work you. On you. You'll be reborn in the USA. How about that? So when he was a young man, like 23, 24, and put out his first album, there was this very famous writer for Rolling Stone magazine who sort of discovered Springsteen in a way, bringing him out to the mass market. And the first line of the first article about Bruce Springsteen says, "I have seen the future of rock and roll, and it's Bruce."
Great, yeah.
And when I saw Long Island Yachts for the first time, right, with this sort of luxury day boat classification, with really top-notch engineering and really, really top-notch components and performance that we'll talk about in a bit. And most of all, this sort of, I'll use the word strange because it was so unexpected to me, or sort of ironic styling that was doing so well in Europe. When we met, you had put 80 boats into Europe, right? Yeah. And with an American look. And I said, I have seen the future, and it's Long Island Yachts, right? And now you're making a greater entree into America, including one that was delivered to not far from where I sit in New Jersey, a few months ago. How did that happen?
Oh, that's a very nice story. Beginning of the COVID pandemic, I received an email from a lady, and she was inquiring about Long Island boats and also about pre-owned boats that were on a website. And we had some email contact, and very nice. And then after a couple of weeks, I got another email from a guy with the same last name who turned out to be her father. And we also had some email contacts and then talked on the phone. And he said, well, my family and I, we were in this kind of locked up situation, and we were searching the World Wide Web for the perfect boat. And that's how they came to Long Island. And it was very, very smooth sail. Really, very much appreciate the trust of the buyer, who I never met, but we did everything via email and a little very small by not too many calls. And he decided to buy a pre-owned Long Island 25 Sportsman.
He bought it blind. He never saw it.
He bought it blind. And I really appreciate the trust that he gave us. So, yeah, really.
That's great.
You hear my hesitation, but I'm really touched by the way this deal went. So there was we never met, but we immediately felt a great respect towards each other, because of the trust that he gave us, we also really did our very, very best to get this boat. It was, of course, a pre-owned boat.
Yes, some, brokerage boat. Yeah,
to give it all the love, tender, and care that you give to a boat and to bring it to him to get it delivered to him in the best state of a pre-owned boat.
And it came over by freighter, I'm sure.
It came over, yeah. It was there's a possibility to send it by roll-on, roll-off shipment. So we put it on a trailer, a pre-owned trailer, and drove it to the port, and then the shipping company put it on the ship.
So that is great. I've recently heard an expression I've never heard before, which is ro-ro. You know ro-ro?
Ro-ro, yeah, exactly.
I had never heard of that, but it's great. Yeah. You put a boat on a trailer. You put the trailer on the freighter. In the destination port, they put the trailer on the dock, and then you come up with your truck and you drive it away. Ro-ro.
Exactly, yes. Roll on, roll off. Yes.
So I got to run this boat. So this boat's in New Jersey on Barnegat Bay. I know you've been to New York and I think New England. I don't think you've ever been to New Jersey. Is that right?
I've been to New Jersey in 85, but a long time ago, Dave.
So Barnegat Bay is a large bay. It's mostly protected most of the time, although it's had some serious hurricane stories over the years. And it's really shallow. It's a soft bottom, but it's shallow. The average depth in Barnegat Bay, we'll put it this way, there's very few sailboats in Barnegat Bay, yeah. You know. Parenthetically, I'll put this up on the blog, and they'll see it on your website as well, but the one of the things that's really notable for me about Long Island Yachts on the design and engineering side is that the propeller is protected. It's behind a protective skeg. If you run aground on anything soft or hard, you're not going to wipe out your drivetrain, right?
Right.
And in Barnegat Bay, that's a big deal, you know, as it would be in Chesapeake and lots of places. So I was anxious to see that boat after the ro-ro story, and the owner was kind enough to take me out on her. And this sea trial answered for me questions that I've had for a while. Because when I ran a couple of Long Islands with you in Holland, it was mostly in the canals and it was not a lot of room and we really couldn't open it up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
For me, that wasn't an American yachting experience. So I was looking to really put the pedal to the metal and put this boat through its paces. And the owner was just so generous with his boat and his time, and we went out. And looking at the specs for Long Islands, one of the things that jumped out at me was that foot for foot, the boats are heavy or heavier than the competition. Let us say. And when I look at boats, I have a strong belief that heavy is good. When you fall off a wave or a wave falls on you, you know, mass is everything. Saltwater weighs 64 pounds per cubic foot. When you hit that, it's going to hit back, right?
It's like concrete.
Yeah. So my positive prejudice, my positive prejudgment is I like heavy boats. Most of the, with sufficient power, a heavy boat will do everything a light boat will do, perhaps burn more fuel. But in terms of comfort and stability and dryness and pounding and strength and adversity, I just like weight, you know?
Yep.
And looking at the specs before I ran a Long Island in real conditions, they just struck me as heavy boats. And you and I never talked about this. Your partner, Dave, he and I never talked about it, but it was just in the back of my mind. Like what's going on here? So, the owner of the 25, we go out and, it was definite chop on the water and it was such a dry ride. And going up on plane, you know, from 0 to 25 knots, it just went up on rails. The bow didn't come up. It just went straight. You had great visibility through the whole thing. And then crossing waves, putting it through turns, backing it down. It just had this sort of rock solidness to it that I had never, honestly, never seen before in a 25-foot boat. Mm-hmm. I've owned a bunch of fishing boats, and look, this is my career. I live on boats. I'm on boats 300 days a year some years, and I had never seen a small boat this solid. And the owner, who's a very experienced yachtsman, boats big and small, power in sail. He's been doing this his whole life, grew up on Barnegat Bay. He agreed completely. So when I got back to my desk, you know, I called you and Dave, your partner, and I said, you were very anxious to hear my opinions, as I recall, on the sea trial, right?
Right, absolutely.
And I told you my story, and I said, now I get it. And now I get why you build your boats this way, but where is the weight? And Dave explained, well, you know, the bottom of the boat is not cored. The decks are cored and the side of the hull is cored, but the bottom is solid fiberglass, and that's heavy. And I love that, you know, not just for the weight, but for first of all, the weight's where you want it, right? It's down low. And you've got great impact resistance when you hit things that you shouldn't. So I learned, look, it's only on a sea trial that we really learn boats. And I learned a tremendous amount there. It just reinforced for me, well, look, like they say, if it ain't Dutch, it ain't much.
Yeah. But replying on that, Dave, that you found it out in a positive way. We also had some owners that had some accidents. For example, one guy, he was speeding at night with a
Nothing good happens from that.
With a Long Island 33 and on the inland waterways in Holland, and he missed a turn in the river. So he really flew onto the land. And so the boat was
up on the land. Oh,
say, I'm trying to find in distance how many. Well, maybe 20, 30, 30 feet into the land. So it came to a standstill. And next day we went there with a crane, put the boat in the water, started the engine and drove off. Nothing was damaged. Not the rudder, the propeller, no holes in the boat. It was, because of the skeg you mentioned earlier that protected the propeller and the rudder.
There
was no damage. Absolutely no damage at all.
I love it. Do you have any pictures of that?
No, sometimes we have to be discreet.
How come every time I screw up, there's a picture? I'm serious about that. Well, you know, I'm encouraging my clients and friends and readers and listeners to see a Long Island yacht with their own eyes. This boat in New Jersey is available to be seen thanks to the graciousness and generosity of the owner. I mean, he's a member of your cult, and cult members like talking about their boats, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So when I look at a boat, well, let me tell you a story. A long time ago, maybe 20, 15 years ago, I was at a boat show with my friend Michael, who really knows boats. And we saw this boat that was just ugly, you know? And you could just tell like Long Island Yacht, it did not spring from a big idea. I'll just say that. And Michael said, you know, she may be slow, but she sure is ugly. And I said, you know, it takes a lot of work to build a boat that bad. Have to have a plan almost, you know.
Terrible, yeah.
So over the years, perhaps because I think about things too much, I've sort of come up with my own analytics for evaluating boats, sort of like a matrix. When I see a boat I've never seen before, I sort of run it through my matrix of what is a good boat, or how to evaluate. I'm making this too complicated. How to evaluate a boat. And I evaluate a boat in five ways, and they all begin with the letter V, so I can remember it. And here's what they are. The first is visibility. And by visibility, I mean your view from the helm, both while you're running the boat at speed, you know, forward, and while you're docking the boat, where you have sort of optimally 360 degrees of visibility, being able to see your two aft corners, or if there's someone in the water or a kayak coming up behind you or anything. So V is for visibility. And when I look at boats, I expand that definition to really mean everything related to safety considerations on a boat. I know you do, and many of my listeners do. If you read my blog over the years, one of my signatures is Safety Dave. I'm sort of obsessive about that. So V for visibility. The second one is ventilation, which is airflow, you know, through a boat, whether it's through opening hatches or opening windows or opening doors or air conditioning, a quality boat needs good ventilation, both for the comfort of you and your guests, but also they're easier to clean, they're easier to keep mold and mildew free. And I think a designer has to give serious thought to this up front. The next V is velocity, which is really how she handles at all speeds and how economically she can run at all speeds. The fourth one is volume, which is a use of space, which on a smaller boat, even on a big boat, you know, bad use of space it'll cripple you no matter what you do. So that is elbow room and ergonomics, of course, but also storage of supplies. Designers often are influenced by the marketing people in their companies, and the marketing people are not very concerned about storage. So that's a tension where a good use of volume will resolve that. And the last V is value. You know, what is the value of this boat? And value is, for me, very different than price. And if you go back over the past in my blog, and this is going to be the real focus in the next year of these five V's, but particularly value, I'm looking forward to engaging in this conversation with my readers and clients. So anyway, those are the five V's by which I evaluate the quality of a boat. Are there any of those that you'd like that intrigue you, that you'd like to talk about Long Island Yachts in regard to?
Well, when you talk about velocity, you also mean performance, and that's something that I really like about the Long Island boats. The way these boats go into plane, it's not like the nose goes up and you have a lot of noise, a lot of waves, and then suddenly the bow goes down and you're planing. No, the way a Long Island goes into plane, you don't notice it. So there is hardly a difference between what's the English word for it, for displacement speed and for planing speed.
It
goes into plane so smoothly, and I really like that, because the nice thing about that is you can drive the boat at any speed between 0 and 30 knots plus. So you're not bounded to decide, okay, I go into plane or I go into displacement mode. You can do any speed that you like, and that's very comfortable as well. So you don't have to really think about how you handle the throttle.
I like that, and I think that's. That addresses that V in particular. You know, we haven't talked at all about the drivetrains. How are these boats powered? Why do they handle well in terms of the engines?
They handle well also because of what you mentioned before, the small skeg that's underneath, and then the propeller being in a tunnel. Mm-hmm. So it's very efficient because there isn't a high angle for the propeller, and the weight distribution where the engine is located, that also helps.
Right.
You have a lot of boats with a stern drive where all the weight of the engine is in the back. So no wonder into planing mode, when you open the throttle, it first the nose comes up.
So are these straight shafts? Are they IPS drives? What are they?
They're straight shafts. On the 40, we also have the option to go for twin Volvo IPS. And the 40 really, with these IPS, it's like running on rails. In the beginning, I was skeptical before we built first 40 with twin IPS. I was, I like shafts. They're easy to maintain, and it's the best drive that you have. But the power and the control that you have with these IPS, it's very, very nice, I must say. So I was convinced about that drivetrain as well. So the 40 twin IPS, and for the rest, either single or twin shaft drives. And most engines that we use is Yanmar, but to be honest, on the latest boats, we use the V6 Mercury Marine diesel, 270 horsepower.
So your latest boats, you've got a new model out, right?
Yeah, we have we sold three numbers from the drawing board.
Really? Blind?
Blind, yeah. It
was Ooh, blind. You're good at selling to blind people.
The nice thing is that these owners they know the kind of boats that we build and the quality that we build, and this is not the first new model that we brought. And actually, the first boat we had, it was nothing like a prototype. It was a perfectly running. The very first boat we built was spot on.
What was that? What model?
A 33 Sportsman. And we were by that time amazed ourselves by how it handled, how it performed. And when you step on board, it just fits like a glove. There's so much room to walk around. Very practical, very ergonomically. So that was really nice. But talking about this 29, so we had first client buying it from the drawing board, and he has he owns a Wire 55 that is in the south.
Tell me the story. That's great.
And he has a very nice house on a Dutch lake and a smaller lake. And he says, I want to have this high quality experience that I have from my Wire, but then on a smaller boat. And this 29 really was the perfect size. And he said, I really appreciate so much the Long Island design and the Long Island quality. And it's really great that you have the option for a 29. So that was like a no-brainer for him. And we're very happy that the two out are followed. So,
wow. When do they deliver? When do they splat? When can I run one?
That will be in the beginning of, in a couple of months, actually. So the first one will go to Holland. The second one will go to Denmark. And we have a new Danish in dealer. They're also the dealer for Grandbanks in Denmark. And he really appreciates the design and the quality of the boat, and so he bought one. Very nice.
Yeah, you know, a new Wire 55 is $3.5 million US. That is, the Long Island Yacht 33 is about a tenth of that, and that he saw a relationship, that he saw the quality between those two boats, just speaks really loudly about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Great story.
Yeah, we really appreciate and we really appreciate the client for giving for trusting us building a brand new boat and a new design for him.
Wonderful. Well, you know, that's a great way to end our talk today. I love that story. I've loved this whole conversation.
And, so did I,
well, thank you. I mean, this is the inaugural podcast of the Foghorn. You will forever be known as being here at its creation. Thank you, my friend.
Really was my pleasure, Dave. It's always a pleasure to talking to you, always a pleasure meeting you. And what I really appreciate is your the way you look towards boats. And we have so much in common in that respect. So very much appreciated.
All righty. You take care. I hope you've enjoyed this inaugural episode of the Fog Warning Podcast half as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Please subscribe to the podcast to be regularly updated with new episodes. I can pretty much guarantee a good time will be had by all. Detailed show notes with links, videos, and photos are available on the podcast main page. And of course, a deep dive into all things nautical can be found on the Fog Warning blog at thefogwarning.com. If you have questions about anything you've heard today, if you'd like more information on the yachts we discussed, if you'd like to talk to me about selling your yacht, or if you have suggestions about what you'd like to hear on the podcast, just email me at dave@thefogwarning.com. And of course, please feel free to spread the good word. This podcast is available on my website, on iTunes and Spotify, and just about anywhere fine podcasts can be found. So, until next time, let's be careful out there and enjoy.